Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. On today's episode of Wandering DMs, we're going to be debating the merits of original D&D in 1974 by Gygax and Arneson versus basic D&D in 1981 by Tom Moldvay. Paul and I run D&D in a very similar fashion, but one of us comes from original D&D and the other comes from basic D&D. So which one is better and why? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
All right, everyone, that's basic versus original D&D. Before we get into it, I want to remind everyone that we will be having at the end of our show our usual after-party chat, which is a live video chat hosted by Dan and I. You can join it. It occurs right at the end of the show, around 2 p.m., a little, maybe 2:10 p.m. Eastern time. And it's hosted on our private Discord server. You can get access to that by becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Join at any tier, and you'll get an email about how to access our Discord server. And come on in, join the chat.
We had new patrons just last night. We had to update the credits at the end of the show. So welcome to our new patrons, and look forward to seeing you on our after chat on Discord server. So of course, this is the, as we've been celebrating all year, this is the 50th anniversary year for original D&D. And Paul, it's the 43rd anniversary of Moldvay Basic. So we should be celebrating both the 50th and the 43rd, whatever metal that is.
All right. Happy 43rd to Moldvay Cook Basic D&D. Now, of course, so this comes up, Dan, because of our personal history with the game, right? So at some point you got into original edition D&D. And at that time, I think I was still trying to land on exactly what flavor of old school D&D I wanted to run. And I really enjoying basic, but that's what I grew up playing. Oh, what I was playing was really a very weird mishmash because I had the basic set, the Moldvay Red Box basic set, and the first edition AD&D Player's Handbook. So I don't think I was super aware of like where I was accidentally merging, crossing the streams there. But anyway, just for a little history there, those books were pretty out of print and difficult to find online this was probably around 2010 when I started my campaign.
Right.
So for a long time, I played running Labyrinth Lord, and then slowly became more and more disenfranchised with Labyrinth Lord, which is fine, is a great system, but just I think I had just internally memorized some of BX and was surprised to discover cases where Labyrinth Lord diverged from that. And so then eventually I went straight back to pure BX and I ran that for a very long time. Now, more recently, I have not had an ongoing D&D campaign to run for a couple of years now, but I still continue to run it at conventions, as do you. And you've been keeping up your original edition Delta, which is your house rules for OD&D. And so at a certain point, I said, I'm just playing this, I'm running this infrequently enough that, and frankly, you and I kind of, we run at the same cons, we run with the same friend groups. I was like, this is probably just confusing to our friends. I'm just gonna go ahead and use Dan's stuff. Although still, ultimately, I cannot bring myself to 100% just embrace running it pure. Like,
right.
I just can't, like, switch the Dan switch on and go,
right,
I'm just going to run this exactly as Dan does. Because there's just some things that I remember from BX that I love. And then that it just, in some cases, they're just ingrained in my memory. And I just, like, if I'm at the table and I just have to make a ruling, I'll make a ruling based on my memory of BX. So I don't know. I don't know what the right choice is here for me, honestly. But yeah, I thought it'd be interesting for us to dig in and like, let's talk about some of the actual differences. What are the pros and cons of it?
Totally. Like, what are those things that got stuck in your head specifically is probably the main thing that was motivating me for this. You touched on a couple interesting things that, you know, when we were, you know, working out our personal games, particularly like early 2000s, there was this window where the classic games were not in print and weren't available online, which was the fundamental thing that spawned all the retro clones to begin with, to make something available to us and our players openly. You know, now we do have a lot of those classic rules available in places like DriveThruRPG. Both of these rule sets that we're talking about today are available right now for just a couple bucks on DriveThruRPG. They're both big sellers. We do have our OED rule set that we use for a lot of the Wandering DM stuff. And if you'd like to see that, all that stuff is for free for what it's worth. You can go to oedgames.com and you can get some couple page briefs. And there's also OED Expanded, partly due to a lot of great work from our patron William, who's done a lot of great work there. You can go to oedgames.com, look for Expanded, and you'll see a website that you'll go to an online site that has a completely fully featured rule set for classic D&D with the way that we would style it personally. So
to be clear, but nonetheless, we still have this, right, is that the your OED is a delta, right? It's changes, it's house rules that you need the original edition to layer on top of. And I believe what Williams made is to just condense that into a single text. Is that right?
What we have is you know, me coming from using original D&D as my basic assumption. What I've usually called OED, you're right, Paul, are house rules modifying a couple things in original D&D. And Expanded is everything you could possibly need, even if you didn't have original D&D. We do have at this point, a fully featured expanded game form that you don't even need original D&D for. So it is a complete game at that point. Building off of original.
Just credit where credit's due here. Dan seems to like to use the royal we. I had no hand in writing any of this. This is all Dan.
So for OED, I did the typing, right? But, you know, a lot of the ideas have been bounced off Paul, and things that maybe I've learned in games with Paul, frankly, have gotten into it. So Paul's partly to blame. No, I have to take a look. If there's something wrong, you should probably blame me. If there's probably something wrong, you should definitely blame me. I will take responsibility for stuff that doesn't work right.
Here's another funny little tidbit that folks, especially folks who are watching the video, apologies to those of you listening to the audio podcast. But another just oddity here is I have a stack of books here that I'm going to be referencing as we talk about this, and they are the original texts. But they're going to look weird because for some reason, at the time when I was digging through different versions of D&D and getting into running classic D&D, I was also picking up the hobby of bookbinding. So I have some books here that I promise you are the original text, but are not going to look like any books you're used to. And just for an example here, here's my Labyrinth Lord books, which look, gosh, an awful lot like the BX books. but this is actually just the original Labyrinth Lord text, which I broke apart into a player's version and a DM's reference and as two separate books. I actually have a whole pile of the player's ones, which I used to just keep on the table for my players because I was like, you're not going to have the books? Here they are. Go nuts.
Nice.
So I use that for Labyrinth Lord a lot. And when I switch to BX, of course, now I have this text here, which... again, looks weird. It is, in fact, both the basic and the expert rulebook bound into a single volume. And then, of course, I have my original edition, which just looks completely unlabeled and plain. But there you go. Just so you're, in case anyone's wondering what's going on, whether these weird books that Paul keeps lifting up and looking at, that's what's happening.
Likewise, I'm accustomed to seeing what Paul has there. Likewise, I also have a big stack of books over here. And one thing I'll point out is that you can tell how much I used books by how much they're completely torn to shreds. And, you know, because I don't have any bookbinding facilities over here. And I will say, look, I got started with the Holmes basic set is actually how I personally started playing D&D myself. And I had a really long running campaign all through like actually elementary school, junior high and high school in Moldvay BX. I mean, it's a great set. And we had great times with it for over a decade. So my Moldvay basic rule set, which initially was actually borrowed, which actually another player had as a gift and then just handed off to me and said, Dan, could you run this? This is completely torn to pieces, pretty much. So well used, and the cover's off and there's tape inside and all kinds of stuff like that. So this has been a well-loved, well-used, very useful rule book, I got to say.
That's great. You know, I have, as you can probably see behind my head, I've got a couple of the original boxes, which have, like, nice copies of those original books in it. But somewhere along the way, when I was collecting these things, I did end up with a couple of copies that looked a little bit more like Dan's. And in some cases, the cover was just completely destroyed, which is ultimately how I ended up building this thing. Because I was like, I have the pages, the covers are dead, and why don't I bind them up? So, and just so you know, nope. This does not try to do what the BX text claims you can do of commingling the pages into sections. Yeah. That was a lie, a falsehood. It is actually totally not possible to do. So I just have all of the basic book followed by all the expert book here. Yeah.
Totally true.
Another document I have at hand, Dan, which is available on my blog at Paul's Game Blog, is this little four pager. Called the BXCL. So when I was running basic D&D, I was starting to write down my own house rules, things that I had changed, which I just called the BX change list or the BXCL. I haven't looked at this in a long time, but I found it useful to go back and look at just to remind myself what was core versus what was I changing, just to remind myself. So I might reference that thing a little bit too.
Nice. Well, let's get into it. Okay, so I had the opportunity to play in one of your games about a week ago. So we sit down to make player characters in a game that Paul's running, and we're going to say, you know, OED is largely being used here, and you say we're basically playing original D&D is what you say to the players, and as they make characters, the very first, and I do feel like the biggest. Change between the single biggest change between OD&D and basic D&D, but specifically Moldvay. This is not something that existed in Holmes Basic, actually. But the single biggest change, what would you say, Paul, is the thing that always comes up from a player when you say we're playing original D&D?
I mean, you original rather than basic?
Yeah, when you say original D&D and a player's making a character, the first thing they say is, oh, well, then the characters are like this.
I would guess that the thing I seem to recall is that people immediately, when you say you're playing an old edition or a classic edition of D&D, their heads immediately tend to jump to first edition AD&D. And so they're looking for things like that generation systems, like 46 drop the lowest.
I was thinking of race's class.
Races, okay.
So someone that's usually knowledgeable.
I thought that was originally where you were going, but that's basic. That's not OD&D. Right?
Well, that's what I mean, is a lot of people think that OD&D had races class. That's exactly my point. So we're playing original D&D, and inevitably I find that there's one... you know, pretty knowledgeable player, pretty knowledgeable player who responds to original D and they go, race is class. Elf is a class, they'll say.
Elf is a class.
And we have
in fact, that was unique to BX. That was, in fact, unique to BX, right?
Yes.
There's actually nothing in the OD&D text that says that elves... I mean, the interesting thing, right, is in the... I can see where the confusion comes from, right? Because in OD&D, in the very first Three Little Brown Books, you only have three classes, right? There's no thief yet. You just have fighting man,
correct,
magic user, cleric. And class is like the very first thing in there, right? Immediately it's like making a character, you gotta choose a class. And then for some reason, race comes after that. and then as you get into the classes, it's just, or the races, it just says things like, well, dwarves. Dwarves may only opt as the fighting class. The end. Right? Halflings can only be fighting men. So, like, already, like, the difference between race's class in BX versus OD&D, dwarf, and halfling is not huge. Right? Right?
Not huge, but...
In, in, is if you choose a dwarf or a halfling in OD&D without supplement 1, you don't get a choice of class.
True, but you still have to look at the fighter advancement table, right? There's no dwarf labeled advancement XP table. There's no halfling labeled XP table. You have to go to the fighter XP table.
Yep, I agree.
Class.
Yep. And then ultimately, then you get the super confusing entry for elves, which tells us elves can begin as either fighting men or magic users and freely switch class whenever they choose from adventure to adventure. Mm-hmm. And how does that work? It doesn't really tell us.
But it's the germ. Of course, Paul is correct about that. We can debate what that was intended the moment that was written. But that, of course, that was the germ of multiclassing. That's what became multiclassing later on. And if you go to the first OD&D supplement a couple months later, where thieves were introduced, right, on the same page that you have thieves, it says, well, your dwarves can be thieves. Your dwarves can be fighter thieves. Your elves can be fighters or magic users or switch, or they could be thieves, or they could be fighters and magic users and thieves all at the same time. So my point is that, you know, multi-classing was inherent to original D&D right off the bat. Races, you know, having one thing as your race and one thing as your class is in original D&D, and the idea that you have an elf class with an elf advancement table, that was new by Moldvay, right? Nobody else had that until 1981 was the first time that idea was invented to simplify the game for incoming players. And I do find it interesting. So that's usually something we have to correct with people that think original D&D is basic, and they're not. Yep. Original D&D actually has more flexibility to it.
Now, it's an interesting problem, ultimately, that Moldvay and Cook are trying to address here, right? That if you're...
Yeah.
And I'm assuming, Dan, and maybe you are too, but we should say this out loud. I'm assuming that Moldvay and Cook, even though it came out after first edition AD&D, I generally see that more as an iteration on top of original D&D than anything to do with first edition AD&D. You agree with that?
I do agree with that. It's 80% the truth. There's a couple places where it looks like some ideas from AD&D got in to basic. But it's very uncommon. It's clearly, and I think they were saying in promotional material at the time, it's clearly in the tradition of original D&D. Yeah, no doubt about it. It's not trying to be AD&D.
Now, I would say that both you and I, Dan, have tackled the problem of how do non-human races select their class? Both you and I have tackled that problem, and ultimately, I think, come to conclusions that are not based on any of those texts, right?
Yeah.
You agree with that?
That is the number one
house rule thing, I think, by both of us, where we're like, I don't think either. Neither OD&D nor BX really got what I want. And I'm going to have to.
I think you're right. I think I'm leaning on the ambiguity in that original D&D text to interpret it in a way that we like. You're right.
Yeah.
Let me ask this question. So fundamentally, what do you like better? Do you like races class, or do you like race separate from class? Just to be clear.
I prefer them to be separate. Now, I did for a while when I switched to BX. I tried to run it straight by the book. I was like, we're going to do exactly by the book, races class. And I can see an argument for it. Let me be clear. I wrote a whole blog post about this way back then in the day, where I was like, you know what, if you read Tolkien or watch the movies, either way, you definitely get the impression, right, that there's some intrinsic difference between Gimli and Aragorn, right? Or Legolas and Gandalf, right? A wizard is a wizard and an elf is an elf. They both have some magic, but they're totally different. Other than that, they're just totally different. And I kind of don't hate that, frankly. I don't hate the idea that, like, elf is its own unique thing, and it just approaches the world in its own unique way. I don't hate it. But, you know, we also get into the problem of, you know, the four classes and the fact that that I know that you are opposed to clerics and... Right. Adding in the thief in supplement 1 muddies the water quite a bit. And then it muddies it even more when you decide to interpret it as Thief is a replacement for the broken cleric rather than an addition to the game.
Mm-hmm. we like to argue that.
Yeah.
We like to pitch that. I will say, you look at Tolkien, mm-hmm. and you know, and a player could go, you know, I want a halfling who's a thief, right? And if you're playing BX by the book, that's not an option. You know, so it seems like it's kind of an obvious thing that you would
Good
want
point.
From the literature. So having that as an option on the table is a plus for OD&D, I think.
I totally agree. Now that said, I do want something in the rules that is going to encourage people to pick human, right? I feel like if you just take BX and you say, I'm going to house rule this, I'm going to remove the racist class bit, there's not a lot of reason to play a human.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. Yeah. We're going to brush up on, I think, something else we may get into. I mean, I'm going to briefly address just a question from Hobo Ogre in the chat here. A couple minutes ago, asked, "Don't the BX books even mention AD&D as the next step?" And the answer is not in BX. Yes, absolutely. If you're talking about the earlier Moldvay basic set, absolutely. And this actually was, written initially by John Eric Holmes, but was edited by Gygax, and Gygax himself went through and put a whole lot of all caps promotional copy for. Yeah, you want your halfling thieves, go to see Advanced D&D. But that was actually removed in BX. So the addition by Moldvay that we're talking about today very much embraced at this moment in the 80s that TSR was going to be supporting two separate lines of Dungeons & Dragons, one Advanced and one this Moldvay basic set. And they were going to be not expected to be compatible, actually, and they actually don't have text about Advanced D&D all the way through it. So that's something that's interesting to be clear about.
There's an afterword in the basic, at the very end of the basic book, which in fact it's definitely a little advertising in there, but it's not advertising first edition AD&D. It's advertising the expert set and the never published companion set.
Companion supplement. This is talking about a companion supplement that wasn't published in the way that they expected their writing in 1981. Correct.
Yep.
Correct.
Yep. But yeah, not any mention. So, So I did house rule. Sorry, I want to get back to the racist class discussion. So I did house rule, and it's in my BXCL, which I have here and you can find on my blog. I did house rule back a race and class split. Ultimately, I did want that in my game. And I had to make some stuff up, right? Because again, I was assuming, right? I definitely don't call this an interpretation, right? Because I was assuming BX as a starting point, but now I'm trying to fix BX. And so I'm introducing ideas that are different. And then like the first thing I have to face, right? So I have to look at things like, what are the requirements? How does, what race class combos are allowed? How does multi-classing work? What are the limitations? Mm-hmm. What is the downside to playing a non-human class, or race rather? And I tried a lot of different things. This is an area where I experimented a lot before I came to what is in the BXCL. And ultimately I landed on something that I quite like, which is a little different from what's in OED.
Which is what?
Which is basically that. So I kept in BX, there is some stat requirements to choose a non-human. Kept those.
Okay.
Right? You have minimum stats to be a dwarf, an elf, or a halfling. And then the other thing I really struggled with was the major limitation that was introduced in AD&D, which is level limits, racial level limits. Which I do not like. And so I did not include that. Now, I think you have that in OED, correct?
I mean, that's in original D&D, right, to be clear. So I, by reference, Yeah, I don't think I actually wrote it in OED because that's a core original D&D thing for all the races. So like just looking at volume one here, original D&D, right? So dwarves can only go up to 6th level fighter, halflings can only go up to 4th level fighter, and elves can go up to 4th level fighter or 8th level magic user. And you know what? I'll say that's a little bit of a weak point. I don't have that written in OED because I'm assuming OD&D is your basis, and therefore occasionally players get surprised by that. And I feel bad about it. I've had players go, yeah, I want a halfling. I want a halfling fighter. Great. And then when they get to the fourth, I go, that's it for you. And they're like, what? And admittedly, that wasn't actually written down in OED itself. And then what happens is I come up with some magical way that they can increase their level limit in campaign for what it's worth. But yeah, that's a core part of the difference of, non-human races since, that very first book in 1974. Is that the best mechanic? I think most of us will agree it's not the best mechanic. I do still rely on it myself.
So here's an interesting fact, right? The way the BX books were written is a little unusual in that they split up the content by level advancement, right? So if you're reading just the basic book, there's no mention of level caps because it only goes to 3rd level. Right? Yeah. It doesn't matter. There's only up to 3rd level. So I got to jump to the expert set here to try and find out, are there level limits or not? And I'm looking at the level charts here, and I can see dwarves in advance. Now, allegedly, according to the little teaser text we got at the end of basic, the expert set's going to get me up to level 14. But the dwarf chart goes up to level 12. And the elf chart goes up to level 10. And for some reason, the halfling chart goes only up to level 8.
Which you'll notice is it's almost exactly double the limits originally in original D&D. So they want to be a little bit more flexible. They took the original 6 in OD&D, doubled to 12. They took the original 4 for halflings, doubled it to 8. Meanwhile, the straight, the human fighter, magic user, cleric, thief can go up to 14 as advertised.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, for me, I've always kind of felt like, first of all, I've never played with 14th level characters. You say that. I've never played BX with level 14 characters. Never seen it. Never got that high level. And in fact, generally, one of the things I like about original D&D is that the charts basically, in the beginning, they kind of go up to about level 10, plus or minus a little bit, right? But level 10 is, right? Level 10 is name level. And that's kind of assumed to be the end of your progression. And I like that. That feels good to me. So if I look at these charts in the expert set and I say, well, halflings can only make it up to 8, and dwarves can only make it up to 12, that's kind of a moot point. Because it's pretty close to 10. So if I just assume generally that 10 is the top of the level, then there really aren't level caps in expert in BX.
I hear what you're saying. Yep, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, right. Now, what I did notice is if you look at those XP charts, holy cow, it takes a lot more XP for an elf to advance, right? Now, that might be explained by the fact that they're kind of is more or less, pseudo...
Two classes,
right? Yeah,
right,
sure.
Right.
But even let's look at this. It costs more for a dwarf to go up levels than a fighter.
True. By a little bit, right? About 10%.
By a little bit. But yep. So ultimately, that's what you're gonna find in the BXCL. So in the BXCL it says that gives out the list of the different classes that you can be as different races, and then it just says that dwarves and halflings need 10% more XP per level to level up, and elves need 20% more XP. That was where I landed. And it worked pretty well.
Yep, cool. Legit. I was
happy with it.
Yeah. Cool, yep.
But now we're definitely getting into like very house rule-y stuff. So here we go. So that's
sure.
What I'm really trying to lead into is like, are there level limits in BX? And the answer is sort of, but not really, but sort of. Yes, my halfling can only make up to level 8. Right? That and versus 8 versus 14, if you're assuming BX should get us up to 14, that's a pretty significant limit, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
So that was maintained. That's something that was made, adjusted exactly what the level limit is. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's just interesting to me that I don't think the text ever calls it out as a level limit. I need to spend more time. I won't be surprised if somebody can call out and say, oh, this would turn the page to X13 or something.
Yeah, an X7, right? Definitely in BASIC, certainly not, right? In BASIC, certainly not.
Yeah,
right?
No.
It's on X7 where the first sentence for each race calls out what their level limit is.
It's true. And in fact, fighters, if you read the fighters block, it says fighters may advance as high as 36th level. And you have that lovely little, just keep adding. Just keep, you can figure out the math, user.
Right. It's funny, it's funny that original D&D is actually the only rule set that I know of that explicitly says out loud, there's no limit to level, and specifically says, here is the math and you can advance, including add more spells to any arbitrary level you want. And other editions like BX specifically say 36 is the highest anybody's ever going to go. And even AD&D leaves it ambiguous. They have a table that usually goes up to about 30. They don't specifically say one way or the other if that's a hard limit. And it's kind of funny that, again, original D&D actually, in some sense, for this point, has more flexibility than any edition that came later, because it specifically says there's no level limit. And that's actually a difference that I hadn't thought about with BX, is that they establish a specific cap for anybody of 36.
Yeah.
Now that will not affect your game. that will not affect anyone's game, as far as I know it.
I would almost never heard of campaigns that get into those double digit levels.
Yeah.
I am aware that Frank Mentzer has run a few games at TotalCon in the past that are exceptionally high level. But what he's running is some weird amalgam between OD&D and AD&D first edition, I think. I recall.
And that's the exact example I was going to say, is I know that Frank Mentzer plays at really, really super high level is what he likes to do. And partly my understanding, and I've asked him just a couple of questions online in the past, actually, is that fundamentally makes the rule set really not important anymore, is because the characters are so high level, they can frankly do anything that they want whatsoever. And it becomes much more about negotiations and role playing and what is the king doing and this kind of stuff. And, like when I asked him, what do you do about falling damage? And more or less, the answer was, I just don't care because all of my characters can always fly. So it just doesn't matter in any way, shape, or form. There's a lot of other rules that wind up in the same zone as that for Frank. And, Paul, I'll also say, you mentioned that, like, when you were playing in the past, you'd use Moldvay BX and then also a mishmash of some advanced books. That is so common. We had a little bit of conversation on our Discord server this morning, and that was the very first thing that was commented. It's, yes, I like BX, and I add some AD&D stuff to my taste and some house rules, and so common in the 80s to be playing that way. And I'm not surprised that Mentzer's also kind of in that bucket.
Yeah. It's funny, for the sake of this particular episode of Wandering DMs, that we are trying to iterate the differences between OD&D and BX. And unfortunately, the fact is we're going to come up with like a lot of, like, sort of, maybe, it's kind of like this, we think. But unfortunately, that's the way the text is. Okay, they are ambiguous in certain places, and everyone house rules and stuff.
True. I mean, I feel like race's class is pretty
that's
clearly
a pretty
difference
thing.
There.
That is a pretty big difference. And it's an interesting thing, and it is, I think it's fun to play with now and again, but as a regular, ruling, I'm not a huge fan. Like the Matrix,
Let's talk about something else.
You have four classes and four races to choose from, and so there's a whole lot of combos.
See, I like that. I like that mix and match effect. I personally do. That's one reason why I'm really up on race separate from classes, specifically a bunch of interesting combinations like that, with just a couple of basic, you know, choices in those two categories. Yeah. Other example, I think when we started talking, you and a couple other people were talking about, what about the ability scores? So you mentioned in AD&D, the, you know, mode one for rolling ability scores is roll 4d6 and take the best three. In BX, they're still sticking by the book with what happened in original D&D is just 3d6 in order. But on the other hand, they also consolidated what the modifiers are like, right? OD&D has, out of the book, has very, like, the ability scores almost don't do anything for you except for experience adjustments. I guess that you can get as much as a plus one to your AC from dexterity, and I guess up to a plus one on hit points from your constitution. That's it. That's totally it. So a bunch of experience modifiers, maybe plus one to hit points, maybe plus one, I guess, to missile fire. It doesn't affect your AC at all, actually, now I see that. Whereas you go to BX, and you'd say the same thing in the earlier basic set, but you go to Moldvay's BX, and now you have a much more nuanced ability score modifier table that might go anywhere from minus three to plus three, and it's the same for all six ability scores, whereas in OD&D, it was possibly different for different ones.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Dan, but also another interesting oddity of BX here is that the correlation of the modifier to the score is vaguely bell-shaped in BX. And I don't think that happens. Yes. Does that happen in other editions? I don't think it does, right? It's more flat. Am I wrong?
It's a little ambiguous. Let's say basically yes. When you get to AD&D, right? AD&D tends to be a lot more. I want to say like chaos theory, right? So like the modifiers for dexterity in AD&D are like 10 nothing, 11 nothing, 12 nothing, 13 nothing, 14 nothing. 15 plus 1, 16 plus 2, 17 plus 3, 18 plus 4, right? And so all the modifiers in AD&D tend to be like backloaded right at the top end of the scale, and which was part of the evolution that wasn't really planned out a little bit through the supplements. And looking at BX, you can see a place where, again, Moldvay made a courageous decision to entirely rewrite that in a cohesive way that's the same for all the ability scores in a way that's easy to remember. Like, I just happen to sort of remember the dexterity modifiers in AD&D. I can't remember anything else. But for BX, I can immediately tell you what the modifier is for any score for any ability. And that's another place where clearly Moldvay, you know, had a clear design intent that kind of evolved sort of the difference between streets in New York and Boston. Basically, Moldvay are like New York streets, and original D&D is more like Boston streets. They're all a bunch of cow paths that kind of developed in crazy ways.
I mean, you and I praised Moldvay and Cook a lot for cleaning up and making the rules a little more approachable. But I would say it's not perfect. And there are definitely cases where there's oddities in the VX text where it's like, oh, this got a little, you could have organized this a little bit better. Honestly, the ability scores is one of those places for me, because, you know, in later editions, by the time you get to like third edition and later, right, you just have these like straight, like there is a plus or a minus, and it's this number always, and all that changes based on the ability is what that number applies to, right? Whereas you get, if I'm looking at BX, sure, that maybe is true for, say, Constitution, right? Oh, plus or minus hit points, great. But then you get into Charisma, and it gets weird. We have like three columns in the chart, and there's like this adjustment to reactions, and it's not it's like, you know, nothing for 9 to 12 and plus 1 for 13 to 15, and 16 to 17 is still plus and 18 is plus 2. And then also it affects the maximum number of henchmen and the morale of the henchmen, right? And like, yeah, so you end up, right, it's not perfect.
You're right.
It's not, early, right. not as easy to memorize, right, as say, third edition. Ability score modifiers are.
And I'll say that the place where it's not easy to memorize is basically because it was pretty much copied forward from original D&D, right? Original D&D only has a table for one ability score, and that's charisma. Because as we all know, charisma is actually the most important ability score in the game, because that indicates how many henchmen you're going to be bringing with you. And so the place where Moldvay has that a little funky is because he's trying to honor original D&D about what the charisma was for. So what do you like better there, Paul? I mean, hypothetically, you know, completely hypothetical world, would you prefer a whole bunch of distinct ability score tables like an AD&D, or would you like something that's more normalized like in BX or third edition, like you mentioned?
I want something more normalized, and the thing is, I weep over the desire to have the bell curve. I like the bell curve when you first make your characters, and unfortunately it doesn't work when you start dealing with things like, say, a strength spell, and you know, or monsters who have strength greater than 18, and then you're like, the spell curve doesn't work anymore.
Yes. You're right. If you go to Mensur's later Immortal rules, he tries to expand that, you know, for deities and stuff up to 100 scale, because the scale has been getting thinner increments. And then suddenly they get wider again. They actually widen out for a while, and then later on they get thinner again. Later, and it's the worst. It's, if you chart it out, it's just the ugliest looking chart I've ever seen, because it's not expandable in just that way.
I mean, at least he didn't just identify a single stat that got an extra 2 decimal places at the end once you hit 18, because that would be really confusing, Dan.
Which is what Gary did in
AD&D.
Yeah. Only for 18s, right? You can get
only
up to 19.
Only for 18s, right?
There's no decimal. Yeah.
Okay, but we're not talking about AD&D.
We're not.
Let's stick with totally BX versus AD&D. Totally anything else to say about stats or Dan, or should we move on?
I like it normalized.
15 minutes left in the show.
This is going to be a whole series. Okay, just put a little flag right here. This is going to be a whole series. Maybe this is just the episode about characters. I like the ability scores normalized. That's what we do in OED. Pretty close to BX, frankly. Pretty close. A little difference at the 18 number, frankly. And OED is, you know, scalable upwards. That's one of our priorities there, is that it is something you can scale regularly upwards smoothly.
Ultimately, when I have time to sit down and think about it, Dan, I like the OED approach. Unfortunately, this is one of those cases where I definitely have the BX charts stuck in my craw. And so if I'm not paying attention, I will accidentally use those charts and then go, oh, that's right. Okay. They don't scale. Ah, damn it. Stop doing that. 18
it's just
is not better
specifically
than
the 18s of 2 for us, not a 3.
Yeah. If you do that, totally then you just get extra pluses every 3 points, and scales. Yep.
Okay. So for our limited time, I have a big list here, but I'm gonna focus on just player character differences. So here's a big one. And this is a place that also is going to be a little ambiguous, but I do feel there's a big switch here, is what weapons are available to different player characters. And the first one I'll pick out is thieves, right? In original when thieves first appear in original D&D Supplement 1, it specifically says thieves can use magic swords and daggers, period. Now, every single class in original D&D only talks about magic whatever. So to be clear, we always interpret the phrasing of magic this or that as these are the weapons that you can use, whether they're magic or mundane. So by the book in original D&D, as far as we can tell, thieves can only use swords and daggers for weapons. That's it, the end. And that's basically consistent. When you go into AD&D, they can use daggers and a couple different types of swords and they do add a sling, and that's it in AD&D First Edition in the Player's Handbook.
Okay, Dan, let me ask you a question here. Let me ask you a question here, a clarification, please, because I don't have OD&D memorized in this particular regard. How many different kinds of swords are there, Dan?
Well, there's two, and presumably thieves can only use the one, actually. So there's sword. It's originally he has swords and two-handed swords, and we assume that thieves can only use the normal swords. So two is correct.
So there's no short two sword.
There's no short sword.
There's no short sword.
There's just sword. So interesting, and
right?
Sword.
Right. And then this is something that so one thing that I think players are used to from later editions that they will bring to the table that they'll get wrong from both OD&D and basic D&D then is the assumption that there exists a longsword. And that's not a thing.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
That's nope.
Right.
In the BX list, your swords are short sword, normal sword, and two-handed sword. That's it.
Okay, now you're right. See, I tend to forget that short sword is in BX.
Short sword is in BX.
Yeah, interesting.
Now, let me get
my contrast is about thieves is that in BX, thieves say they can use any weapon. They can use any weapon. Is what it says in BX. So that's a big difference in original D&D between just two options of dagger and sword, the end, by which we mean normal sword, and BX saying thieves can use any weapon. And so for me, certainly, if I transition between an OD&D game and a BX game, this is a point where I'll commonly trip up over whether the players, which of those rather different menu of options for thieves are available.
That is a good point. That's a very good point. What about dwarves, Dan? What about dwarves and halflings?
Let's talk about dwarves. Paul. So in original D&D, there's no limitation. There's no mention, as far as I can tell, there's no mention of limitation of races versus weapons. There's just nothing. You can have races. Here's the equipment list. That's it. The end. Now, both, it's same for, and again, same for Holmes basic, because it's just a reiteration of that kind of stuff. Now, BX has some limitations, and advanced D&D also has some limitations. They're not the same. And so this occasionally comes up for us in our games is in BX for dwarves, for example. For dwarves, it says, the sentence is, they may use any type of weapon of normal or small size, but may not use longbows or two-handed swords. Now, in these rules, there's actually no labeling. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Let me pitch a couple, and you can add. Yeah. So among them is that there's no labeling of weapons as normal or small size to begin with.
Yep.
And the question there, when it says, here's a limit, comma, may not use longbows or two-handed swords, is that the only things that are prohibited to them? Or are those two examples of things that are prohibited to them?
Excellent question. The organization of weapons, in fact, in BX is one of my biggest problems with the book, right? So first of all, the information about weapons is all over the place, right? If I flip to B12, I get a complete list of weapons and how much money they cost, and that's it. And if I want to know, for example, how much a weapon weighs or how much damage it causes. Now I gotta go look up some other charts that are later in the book. And that's confusing. And then categorization. Yes. What is small? What is large? I find it super weird that dwarves cannot use bows, long bows, but they can use pole arms? Pole arms is maybe? Unclear.
There's no specific restriction. And to be clear, for those of you in the chat who are now debating about glaives versus geese arms, of course, in original D&D and BX, there's just one type, polearm, right? We haven't only advanced. Advance is where you added the 20-fold types of polearm. So we do have the polearm type. BX doesn't have pikes. BX doesn't have halberds. Original D&D had both of those, actually. Yeah, so can dwarves use a polearm? And I think more fundamentally, can dwarves use a battle axe is a question that might come up. Battle axes in BX are listed as being two-handed. Me personally, I'm not happy with that. I think that's a bad choice to have battle axes two-handed. But assuming we accept that, can dwarves use a battle axe, or are they prohibited under the can only use things of normal or small size? My narrow reading would be the only restriction is longbows and two-handed swords, and therefore I would allow dwarves to use a polearm or a battle axe or something like that. And for what it's worth, you and I, Paul, stumbled over this in our last game. There was a point where we had different expectations about that.
And this is a case where I tried my best, Dan, to address it in the BXCL. Now, as we get into equipment, anybody who's followed my blog especially back when I was running basic, knows that I struggled with equipment a lot. In fact, I completely axed, battle axed even the list of weapons from BX. And the problem I was facing at the time is this is one of those cases where Labyrinth Lord gets really weird, because Labyrinth Lord, of course, is built on top of the SRD from 3rd edition, and so there's all kinds of weapons in there. All kinds of stuff that are not in basic, right? And it gets very confusing. And I was also trying to figure out things like encumbrance and whatnot. So anyway, I wrote my own giant custom chart of equipment, which I now use all the time for all the games. And this is, Dan, even when we sat down to play that game, you may have noticed, I put down a page on the table. I said, here is the equipment list. Okay. Here it is.
Got it.
Now my BXCL tells me dwarves cannot use large weapons, including two-handed swords, polearms, and longbows. And I was trying to interpret the battle axe as this is the two-handed option for a dwarf or a halfling. I have the same text for him. Can't use large weapons, including two-handed swords, polearms, and longbows. Because really, polearm, when I go through the list of weapons that exist in BX, polearm is the only one that they don't list in the example that in my brain I'm like, well, it's clearly a large weapon. Clearly, that's large. It's a polearm, for crying out loud. Right. Now, the downside to that interpretation is why? Why, as a dwarf, would I possibly want to be carrying around a two-handed battle axe that does D8 damage when I can carry around a normal sword, which also does D8 damage and only takes one hand? What's the point?
Right. Agreed. Right?
Normally, one looks at your two-handed sword or your polearm because those are the only D10 damage weapons. And so that's the trade-off. Great. I have to give up my ability as a shield, but I get extra damage. Getting all the way up to that D10, that's impossible to reach. So there's a little part of me that kind of wants to make the battle axe a D10 damage. But
got it. I'll just throw out there for me, and what we do in OED for what it's worth, is we say the battle axe is one-handed. And to me, I'm seeing, you know, Vikings with a shield and an axe. That's how they actually fought. So the battle axe is, for me, one-handed. It does do D8, which is what it does in original D&D. And if you want something bigger than that, you go for a halberd, right? So I read the halberd as the big two-handed choppy type polearm, and that gets you the D10 damage. And that's personally how I do that.
Yep. Ultimately, for me, the real problem is if I really dig into the numbers, I feel like the thing that's broken here is, in fact, the normal sword. If you eliminated the normal sword as an option, your hand axe becomes your one-handed axe. Your short sword becomes your one-handed sword. All these things do D6. You want to get to a D8, you got to go to something like a battle axe. And if you want to get up to a D10, right? But anyway, I'm not going to solve it here, Dan, because I banged my head against this problem a million times, and I've never come up with a solution that made me happy.
Let me throw this out. I will say, so just as you, when in the future, when you think about this, right? So original D&D and BX they match in the weapon damage, right? Now, with the exception that OD&D has small target versus large target, okay, Moldvay made the reasonable decision to slice out that second category. But if you look at the basic weapon damage in OD&D and the basic damage in BX, they match. They are the same. And in both of those rules, axe, you know, the battle axe does D8. So for me, trying to keep things consistent, I would start with, let's just assume the battle axe is D8. what other interpretation can I add to make that balanced with the sword that also does D8? Is the place where I'm trying to tweak what my interpretation is.
Dan, I hate to tell you this, but we're out of time.
This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. I do not agree with it, and I dispute this wholeheartedly, Paul. I cannot believe that we barely scratched the surface of the interesting issues between original D&D and BX.
I'm looking at my BXCL here, which is 4 pages, which I was very proud to get it down to 4 pages. We've only covered things on the first page. We haven't gotten to page 2.
I'm very aware of what just happened. Now, to be clear, Paul and I have been thinking about these exact issues for decades, right? And these are things that are so close to our hearts, and we've thought about them very deeply for years, and we have very strong, very deeply rooted opinions about these things. So I guess I shouldn't, as surprised as I am, I shouldn't be that surprised that we filled up an entire episode about the first couple paragraphs of our house rules, trying to properly dial in exactly these issues. So Paul, would you be willing, please, I hope, would you be willing to come back another episode and talk about other interesting differences between original and basic D&D?
I mean, only if the fans demand it, I think. Oh, wait, there we go. Okay, yes, we'll do it.
Adam, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Oh yeah, I had so many other things to talk about.
I have a long list myself. So yeah.
Okay.
I can't even say that we got through like races and classes.
Well, no, I can't.
Can't even say that we completed that. I think there's still some more there. So we're definitely gonna have to come back to the second part to this. So Dan, any final thoughts on part one of EX versus OD&D? OD&D versus EX,
right? I love them both, right? Okay, so I've played for a long time with Moldvay BX. Again, I always say Moldvay just ran the court. Not 100%, but just like really great, courageous design decisions, and really the first person to really edit D&D in a way that was making reasonable changes. Actually, I do think for the better in many cases. And I love original D&D. I'll say that BX is certain, just for starters, if you're thinking about picking one of these up for the first time, they're both available on DriveThruRPG for just a couple bucks. DriveThruRPG is currently having a sale right now. So I think you can get BX for about $3 and original D&D for about $6 as we tape this morning. Probably BX is easier to get started with. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, original D&D does have more flexibility to it and kind of more ways that the DM can kind of interpret it, twist it, or add things. So they're both great. I love them both. And I'm kind of looking for something in between.
Yeah, something in between. I'm personally kind of torn. If I was going to sit down and plan out, if I was about to play an ongoing classic D&D campaign, what the heck am I going to use? I don't know. Part of me wants to just unify on OED, but I know there's stuff in there, Dan, that I just don't agree with. And the idea of making house rules on top of a set of house rules really irritates me.
I know.
So maybe I would just dust off the BXCL. Maybe I would do that because it is actually pretty good.
I
know that I'm rereading it. Probably like, this is pretty good. It served me for a couple of years. I might use it again.
Probably about every leap year or so, I have the same thought, Paul. And I have this little insert that I put inside here to remind me about what I have to start house ruling for BX to make me happy. And I'm like, oh yeah, let's just go back to OED all over again, because these are starting with race of class are the things that I couldn't quite live with.
Viewers, if you have opinions on BX versus OD&D, or very specifically, if you have some stuff that we didn't cover and you want to see in part two, please leave us a comment in the comment section of the YouTube video. We will definitely look those over before next week when we do part two of this. Can't say for certain if there will or won't be a part three, but so let's assume that we get it together and manage to complete this in two parts. So please get your comments in. We'd love to hear from you and have that impact next week's discussion.
Definitely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We are on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, GitHub, places like that. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and butt heads with that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio only podcast format, maybe while you're driving to work or mowing the lawn or taking a shower. No, that's weird. How would that work? Anyway, you can find those files on our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also find us through various third-party podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher. If you're listening to this podcast right now on one of those sites and it gives the option to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And as always, a huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And just like Paul said at the top of the show, every tier gets you access to our Discord server where the conversation is happening. Well, it's happening before the show occurs, frankly, like this morning. And then it's occurring while the show is happening. And then it's also occurring after the show happened, like all through the week, probably, about issues of classic D&D or new D&D or horror stories or horror games or science fiction or model making or all kinds of stuff are all there. Our patrons are just the smartest, most observant people on the planet, frankly. So you get great advice and you put it in our Discord server. Like Paul said, we'll be there in about 10 minutes or so to continue the content today in our live video after chat with our patrons, and we would love to see you there.
Absolutely.
As a little reminder, the Thursday show is on hiatus for the rest of the summer, so you can go back and see the last episode from last Thursday where I finally painted the villains of the 1980 Star Frontiers game that we've been making molds for and casting and lead and painting. So that's currently on hiatus, but we will be back here in another week. So don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.